Need a Bible to keep, by the way. Please keep it. I want you to have it. Well, although we have just prayed, allow me to once again lead us in prayer. Father, I do just want to join in with Mike and all of us as we've looked to you, Lord. And so once again, we just pray now that specifically as we dig into your word, Lord, that you would take your word and kind of dig into our hearts. That, Lord, you'd help us. We need your work. We have gathered to hear from you. So help us to do that. Lord, give us ears to hear what you would say to us. Lord, on a weekend in which we're remembering the freedoms and all that we have because of the price that many have paid, we thank you. We just thank you for those that have gone before us. And because of them, we live in this free land and all. We thank you. And Lord, not making light of what they have done, Lord, we recognize that that greatest work, of course, was how you have set us free, and that whom you set free is free indeed. So thank you, Lord. We are blessed in so many, many ways. Now, Lord, once again we ask, Lord, help us. Help us to study your word, not just with our head, but with our heart. We ask it in Jesus' name. Amen. Let's come to chapter 18. Of course, you remember that in chapter 17 is that well-known chapter that had to do with David versus Goliath. We covered that last week. And it's one of those stories that we know so well, and yet so full of principles and those things we should walk in and all as we travel this life. They're not just Sunday school stories. They're, of course, a record of that which really did happen. And they point to what God can do through someone who will just trust. We saw that David went out and faced Goliath with just a few stones and a sling and an awesome faith in God. And God delivered him, and God did an awesome work. As we get to the end of chapter 17, before we jump into 18, so we just, because there's a natural flow here, you'll see in just a minute, we come to 18. So let's look at the end of 17 for just a moment so we see the connection. David has gotten victory over Goliath. That in turn caused the Philistines to flee. The army of Israel chased them and had a great victory. And it says in verse 55, when Saul saw David going out against the Philistine, he said to Abner, the commander of the army, "Abner, whose son is this youth?" And Abner said, "As your soul lives, O king, I do not know." So the king said, "Inquire whose son this young man is." Then as David returned from the slaughter of the Philistine, Abner took him and brought him before Saul with the head of the Philistine in his hand. And Saul said to him, "Whose son are you, young man?" So David answered, "I am the son of your servant Jesse, the Bethlehemite." Saul, of course, is king. David, at this point, up until now, had been a young man who was simply tending sheep. But we do know this, of course, that Saul, because of Saul's disobedience, his refusal to obey the Lord, he has rejected the word of the Lord. So God had rejected Saul from being king. So by this point, Saul has been rejected from being king. He's going to be replaced. God sent Samuel the prophet to the house of Jesse to show who the next king would be. And through a process of all the brothers coming before them, finally sending for David, we saw that it's indeed David who Samuel anoints, who will be next, the next king. But this transition from King Saul to David is going to go on for a number of chapters here. There's going to be an interesting contrast, of course, as we study David and Saul. If you've never done that, we welcome you to join in with us. Our study here is not as detailed, though, as you could get. There are many books you can read on this. The Life of David by Pink is a good one. Redpath has a good book on it. There's a book that kind of parallels this called The Tale of Three Kings. It's based on this historically. There's some fictional parts of it all, but it is a good, good book. I encourage you to read that one. Because in all this, there's such a great contrast between David and Saul. Saul is a man who is we're going to see time and again, he's really going downhill in a hurry. He is selfish and bitter and jealous and everything else. He just wouldn't obey God, and so he's rejected by God from being king. Meanwhile, God said, "I'm looking for a man after my own heart." And he found that man in a young man named David. And so we're going to see the contrast of a heart that's after God's heart, continually being contrasted to Saul's heart, which is a heart which is far from God's heart. And we'll see it in big and little ways as we travel along here. So there's this battle in which David gets a victory over Goliath. Saul sees this and says, whose son is this? Now, David had been brought in, you remember, and we'll read about it again tonight, but David had been brought in to play the harp for Saul when Saul would have this, what the Bible calls a distressing spirit from the Lord, come upon Saul. He would get in turmoil. He'd get these various symptoms, apparently, of just really being in distress. And so David would come in and play the harp. But you remember that there was told that the family of the one who defeats this Goliath was going to have all these benefits come along. And so Saul looks and goes, well, whose son is this youth? What family is he from? So he inquires, and David says that I'm from Jesse the Bethlehemite. That's my family I'm from, the family of Jesse, and they live in Bethlehem. Now, during this discussion, while this was going on, apparently Saul's son Jonathan is either taking this in or somewhere right in the area here, because now in verse 1 of chapter 18, we read this. Now when he, that's David, had finished speaking to Saul, the soul of Jonathan was knit to the soul of David, and Jonathan loved him as his own soul. Saul took him that day and would not let him go home to his father's house anymore. Then Jonathan and David made a covenant, because he loved him as his own soul. And Jonathan took off the robe that was on him and gave it to David, with his armor, even to his sword and his bow and his belt. So in these opening chapters now of chapter 18, Jonathan has been observing, apparently, David. He's been watching him. And remember, we have already met Jonathan a number of chapters ago. Jonathan was that one who one night told his armor bearer, said, come on, let's go out to the camp of the Philistines. Let's see if God might just want to do something. Jonathan was a young man who was bold and courageous. He had great faith. And he was a go-for-it kind of guy. He just went for it. Well, Jonathan sees the same thing in David, because David is also a man of faith, a young man who goes for it. Trusts God and just acts in that. He walks out his faith. And that bond, that forms a bond. Jonathan sees that in David. They're both young men who have faith and courage. And so Jonathan's heart, it says, goes out to David. It really just kind of takes to him. And so Jonathan sees this, and they form this covenant, it says together in verse 3, that Jonathan and David make a covenant because he loved him as his own soul. There's this mutual bond that's formed between them. And we'll see for a number of chapters here, this friendship as it evolves and as it's worked out between these two. But please, and I don't know that I need to say this, well, I'll put it out there just in case anybody ever throws it at you. There is nothing unhealthy about the relationship between David and Jonathan. There's nothing implied here as such. And if someone should come along to you and try to use this to support unhealthy styles of relationship, please understand that it's my understanding, first of all, the Hebrew language here is not that. It would not support that kind of thing. We know that God forbids homosexual relationships in the book of Romans and other places. We know that God declares that David is a man with a heart after God's heart. God would never declare that of David if David were involved in some kind of an unhealthy relationship with Jonathan. If there were some kind of perverse thing going on here, God would not have his hand upon David the way he does. All this is trying to say is that these two become close friends. Jonathan is a young warrior, a man of faith. He sees the same in David, and his heart, it says, is knit together with him. They are of like mind. They're all about God and going for it in God, and they see a similarity, and there's this kindred spirit in them, you might say. And so there's this bond formed between them. They're just two guys who really hit it off. A person can have a close friend of the same gender. And that's what's going on here. They are just good friends. And you know, I think I've spoken on it before, but let me just highlight it for a moment. And that is, a close friendship is something that's very, very precious, isn't it? Sometimes in this life's journey, for whatever reason, we might only form one or two or three really close friendships. There's a lot of acquaintances. We have a lot of acquaintances. But sometimes it's far and few between when we find someone we just really click with. always be open to that, of course. Be open to having that kind of a friendship. That kind of close friendship where you know that, hey, I know right now that so-and-so is thinking of me, or praying for me, or is on my side, or, you know, somebody give you a phone call and encourage you to hang in there, or whatever's going on in your life, they're aware of it, they care about you. Those kind of friendships are awesome. And so if you have one, value it. If you don't, be open to it. But let me add this. Sometimes when I say, or I could say something like that, it might be possible for you to say, well, yeah, I wish I had a friend like that, and I wish someone would be my friend like that, and how come no one will be my friend like that? Well, let me ask you this, and I just hope you receive it with love. Rather than asking how come someone isn't a friend to me like that, just say, Lord, make me that way to someone else. Let me begin this process. Let me be someone who reaches out to others. Let me be open to forming a friendship with someone. And you know what? You might meet 100 people before it clicks. Because let's face it, people are busy, and not everyone, they already have close friends, or they're just not there right now. And that's okay. But just be open to it. Because if you are, and if it's God's will and timing and plan, in his timing, he'll bring along someone. But rather than saying, how come they're not being a friend to me? Say, well, I should be a better friend to them. Let me start this whole process of saying, how you doing? Can I pray for you? Or whatever it might be. And then let God take it where he will. But I just thank God for the friendships that I've formed along the way. And I'm just encouraging you to value the such here. And that's what happens here with Jonathan, who is the son of the king. And that kind of friendship, a close bond is formed between him and David, who will be the future king. Verse 5. So David went out wherever Saul went. David went out wherever Saul sent him, and he behaved wisely. And Saul set David, over the men of war, and he was accepted in the sight of all the people and also in the sight of Saul's servants. Now, it happened as they were coming home, when David was returning from the slaughter of the Philistine, that the women had come out of all the cities of Israel, singing and dancing, to meet King Saul with tambourines, with joy, and with musical instruments. So the women sang as they danced and said, Saul has slain his thousands. Now you need to picture Saul and know the kind of guy Saul is. And that's something that had kind of begun to happen. You know, they would proclaim, it's kind of a thing they would do. They'd come out, here comes the king returning with the army. They all would begin to sing, Saul has slain his thousands. And Saul, oh yeah, yep, they're singing, yep, good. And David his 10,000s. Uh-oh. If you know anything about Saul, which you'll learn in a minute, this is going to not go over well with Saul. So they sing, Saul has slain his thousands, and David his 10,000s. Then Saul was very angry, and the saying displeased him. And he said, they have ascribed to David 10,000s, and to me they have ascribed only thousands. Now what more can he have but the kingdom? So Saul eyed David from that day forward. Saul makes David a leader in the army. He says he behaved himself wisely. In other words, he's showing leadership capabilities. And the people begin to admire him. And obviously we know David is getting great victories as he fights. The women greet them returning. But they give David a greeting as he is, a greater warrior than Saul. Saul does not like this. The anger and the jealousy is aroused within him. And it says, from that day forward, Saul eyes David. Saul feels threatened by David. Now remember, God had already declared to Saul through the prophet Samuel that God was going to be taking the kingdom from Saul and giving it to someone else, giving it to one of his neighbors. Indeed, it's declared, it's already begun to happen. God used the terminology, he has given it to someone whose heart was a heart after God's heart. So Saul knows that he's a man on borrowed time, so to speak. He knows he's been rejected. He knows that God is raising up someone else to be king. But who is he? Who is he going to be? And Saul, we'll see, is a jealous man. We see already he's an angry man. He's the kind of guy that will try to hold on to something even though God said it's time to let it go. totally opposite from David. David will, throughout his reign as king, always say, hey, God raises up, God takes down, it's up to God. When his son Absalom, later on, long ways down the road, is going to try to rise up and cause trouble, David will say, hey, that's God's job, not mine. Even during the times when David will have opportunities to slay Saul and to take the kingdom in that way, again, we'll see David say, uh-uh, God raises up, God takes down, I'm not about to get in that place. And that's a heart after God's heart, saying, God, it's your turf, but I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to play God in this. But Saul will try to hold on by force and cunning and all to that which isn't his, and it's sad to watch. So we see now that Saul begins to eye David from that day forward, because he goes, wow, look, they like him so much, they're ascribing to him greater things than me. What else is there more than the kingdom? What else can he have but the kingdom? And he starts watching him. And we're going to see he takes out upon him his anger and his jealousy and all. You know, here he has a young man, and we'll see more of this, but he has David who, okay, they're saying, Saul, you've slain your thousands. And in terms of battle, David has slain his 10,000s. Now, if he's a king whose heart is really after what God wants, if he's a king who really cares about the people, if he's a king who cares about his nation, if he's a king who wants to see his nation getting victory over their enemies, he should be rejoicing that God is working through David in such a way. I pray that I, as a pastor, would never begrudge someone being used here. I mean, you know, if someone came to me and said, hey, God used Sean in some awesome way in outreach, how sad for me to go, well, I better pull him out of that outreach. Better not put him in charge of that thing. If God's going to use him there, we don't want greater results over there. How sad that, wouldn't it be? Saul should be rejoicing. Hey, God using David, man. We're getting that much more victories. Great, go for it. But see, so much about himself, it shows one more time how he doesn't have that heart after God's heart. Doesn't care about God or the people or the nation. The people that God set Saul over to take care of. He should be rejoicing that this is going on. Instead, he's all jealous and covetous towards David. Again, he's just reveal the heart of Saul and the heart of David. Verse 10. And it happened on the next day that the distressing spirit from God came upon Saul. And he prophesied inside the house. So David played music with his hand as at other times, but there was a spear in Saul's hand. And Saul cast the spear, for he said, I will pin David to the wall. But David escaped his presence twice. Saul is plagued by this distressing spirit again. It's just the distressing spirit simply means that it told us in a prior chapter that God had lifted the spirit off of Saul. And with that, when God took his hand off of Saul, that opened Saul up to attacks from the enemy and all. And we see Saul suffering from that. And he apparently would get into these great bouts of depression or whatever it is that would come upon him. It's called the distressing spirit. But they would bring David into play to soothe him. Well, apparently the music doesn't catch hold quick enough. He just starts to play. Saul is really upset and angry, and he's watching David, and so he picks up his spear and he throws it with the intention of pinning David to the wall. But David is fast and he escapes from that. Saul is just more and more. Now he's giving in to this jealousy. He's now beginning to act upon that which is in his heart. Instead of repenting of it, he's acting it out. God does not judge one sin greater than another. And sin begins in the heart. Before we act it out that way, it's going on inside of us first. So here we see him now, it's gone that next step. It was inside of him, but now he's expressing it. He's trying to hit David with this spear. Verse 12. Now Saul was afraid of David, because the Lord was with him, but it departed from Saul. Therefore Saul removed him from his presence, so he sends David away, and made him his captain over 1,000, and he went out and came in before the people. And David behaved wisely in all his ways, and the Lord was with him. Therefore, when Saul saw that he behaved very wisely, he was afraid of him. But all Israel and Judah loved David, because he went out and came in before them. So Saul kind of tries to get David out of mind, puts him over the army, but he's a hit there. He's popular. He does well, and the people admire him more and more. And says now Saul is also afraid. So he's jealous of him, angry at him, and he's afraid of David. Verse 17. Then Saul said to David, "Here is my older daughter, Merab. I will give her to you as a wife. Only be valiant for me and fight the Lord's battles." For Saul thought, "Let my hand not be against him. Let the hand of the Philistines be against him." So Saul makes an offer here to David and offers his oldest daughter, Merab, to Saul to be to David to be David's wife. But his motive in all these things we're going to see is to get David in a place where David will be killed by the Philistines. Because he said, "Well, let not my hand be against him, but let the hand of the Philistines be against him." So he says, "Here, you can have my wife, but you know what? Go out and fight a lot of neat battles. Just go out and really fight the Lord's battles." But it says his motive is so that David will get himself in harm's way and get killed. Well, to this offer that David could marry Saul's oldest daughter, verse 18, "So David said to Saul, 'Who am I and what is my life or my father's family in Israel that I should be son-in-law to the king?' But it happened at the time when Merab, Saul's daughter, should have been given to David, that she was given to Adriel the Meholathite as a wife." So he offered the first daughter, but before that marriage could take place with David, she is given to this other man, Adriel. So now, a new development. It says, "Now Michal, Saul's daughter, loved David." I've heard this young woman's name pronounced a couple of different ways. Today, with today's computer programs, we're able, actually, over in the office, we have a couple of programs. You can pull it up, and it actually will verbally pronounce words for you from the Hebrew and all. We have a couple of programs. Well, one of them pronounced it Michal, which probably is pretty close to the Hebrew, but I don't know. And the other said the common pronunciation is Michal. Now, probably the way they said it, that Michal, if you're used to the Hebrew, there's certain words that you speak, you kind of do that thing. Well, rather than trying to do that every time we come to this, I probably throughout this will tend to use the more common pronunciation of Michal. But if you understand, there's a couple different ways of saying this. I'm aware of that. But I'll probably go with the more common name here, Michal or Michal. That wasn't too bad. That came close. But I'm not going to try that every time. These guys down here don't want me spraying them every couple of verses. So we'll probably go with Michal. But it says, "Now Michal, Saul's daughter," so this is another daughter now of Saul, "she loved David. And they told Saul, and this thing pleased him." Now, do you think it pleased him? "Oh, that's neat. My daughter's found somebody that she loves. Oh, this is really neat." You think that's what pleases him about this? Let's see. "So Saul said, 'I will give her to him, that she may be a snare to him, and that the hand of the Philistines may be against him.' Therefore Saul said to David a second time, 'You shall be my son-in-law today.'" So he keeps making this offer, but his motive in the whole thing is to get David killed. Even he learns that Michal loves David. He does it so she'll be a snare. That's all. His only thing is, he said, "Oh boy, now I can use her." He's a great dad, huh? Great dad. Yeah, oh yeah, okay, yeah, oh, you love him? Great. Because maybe I can use that relationship somehow to get him in a position that the Philistines will kill him. Verse 22. "And Saul commanded his servants, 'Communicate with David secretly and say, look, the king has delight in you and all his servants love you. Now therefore, become the king's son-in-law.' So Saul's servants spoke those words in the hearing of David. And David said, 'Does it seem to you a light thing to be a king's son-in-law, seeing I am a poor and lightly esteemed man?'" David takes the opportunity, this offer, very seriously. Saul gets word to David, "Hey, go for it. Go for this offer of being the king's son-in-law." But I really like David's response. He says, Do you think it's a light thing? Do you think it's something small, something light to be taken that I could be the son-in-law of a king? That I can marry the king's daughter? We just see over and over again his heart. He keeps a view of himself, a proper view of himself. In those days, it was common for a groom to give the bride's parents a dowry. David does point out here that, hey, I'm from a humble family, a lowly family. Where am I going to get a dowry, much less a dowry for a princess? Well, where am I going to come up with anything that would really be suitable as a dowry for the daughter of the king? Verse 24, and the servants of Saul told him, saying, in this manner David spoke. So he's saying, hey, he can't really have a dowry, and he thinks he's really not, you know, worthy of this kind of an honor. How's he going to come up with a dowry like this? Then Saul said, thus you shall say to David, the king does not desire any dowry, but 100 foreskins of the Philistines to take vengeance on the king's enemies. But Saul thought to make David fall by the hand of the Philistines. So what's he say here? Where he gets back and says, hey, he says he doesn't have a dowry. Oh, tell him he doesn't need a dowry. All he needs to do, I'll tell you what, I'll accept this. Just go out and kill 100 Philistines and bring their foreskins to me. Again, the idea of thinking that, man, if he goes to try to fight 100 Philistines, surely somebody among that army will kill him. So when his servants told David these words, it pleased David well to become the king's son-in-law. Now the days had not expired. Therefore David arose and went, he and his men, and killed 200 men. So he doubled the dowry here. 200 men of the Philistines, and David brought their foreskins, and they gave them in full count to the king, that he might become the king's son-in-law. Then Saul gave him Michal, his daughter, as a wife. What can I say? I mean, that's the dowry. Gross, but that's the dowry. I mean, what can we say? But the whole idea was to put him in harm's way. But it didn't work. He does slay all these Philistines. Sure enough, brings them in, brings the foreskins in by full count, counts them out. He said, okay, here's my daughter. So he marries Michal. Verse 28, thus Saul saw and knew that the Lord was with David, and that Michal, Saul's daughter, loved him. And Saul was still more afraid of David. So see, it's getting more and more paranoid, more and more jealous. So Saul became David's enemy continually. Then the princes of the Philistines went out to war, and so it was, whenever they went out, that David behaved more wisely than all the servants of Saul, so that his name became highly esteemed. So Saul is becoming more and more paranoid, more and more afraid of David. And notice it says, Saul becomes David's enemy continually. What we see is Saul, King Saul, is a man on the decline. He is descending, David is ascending, so to speak. His star is rising. And Saul sees this, and he's against David continually because of it. Saul is a sad picture. Remember how Saul began? He began as a humble guy. We first met him when he headed out to look for some donkeys that had wandered away from the family. And when he first was anointed king, they had to find him. He was hiding over in the household goods and all. They had to bring him out and all. And he started so humbly, but yet he went south so quickly, so to speak. When he turned from the Lord, things went downhill, and it's always that way. When you reject the word of the Lord, when you won't have the Lord to rule and reign over you, when you turn your back on the Lord, the road will be downhill. And he'll become a man who's full of anger and fear and jealousy. You turn your back on the Lord, it will not bring good things. You're on your own, and sure enough, fear and depression and paranoia and everything else can come along and plague you. Fruits of the Spirit are peace and joy and love. But when you turn your back, when you wander off, you start experiencing the opposites. And it's not a pretty thing to see, certainly not a pretty thing to experience. Interesting. Here Saul has this totally loyal young man in David. Yet Saul just can't handle David's popularity. Again, I just reflect back on I think any healthy ministry should have the goal of training everybody up and every gift that God has for them and fanning every single flame amongst everybody. And if God is raising them up, great. And if God wants to raise them up and send them out, great. I think that's a healthy ministry when that is the goal. When those who are in leadership, whether it be formerly in a position of assistant pastoring or in other leadership positions, great when they're serving right along here. But if someone came to me and said, you know what, God's put in my heart that he'd have me to go to, I don't want to pick some obscure place, whether it be Africa or somewhere in, Midwest or wherever it might be, great. The idea is train up and I mean, here's David. He's doing really well, and Saul should be rejoicing. Instead, he just can't handle David's popularity. Again, Saul will be an important contrast between him and David, and we see it time and again. When you turn your back on God, wisdom goes out the window, and Saul's wisdom has definitely gone out the window. He's just a sad case. Chapter 19. Now Saul spoke to Jonathan, his son, and to all his servants that they should kill David. But Jonathan, Saul's son, delighted greatly in David. So Jonathan told David, saying, "My father Saul seeks to kill you. Therefore, please be on your guard until morning, and stay in a secret place and hide. And I will go out and stand beside my father in the field where you are, and I will speak with my father about you. Then what I observe, I will tell you." So Saul now takes this next step. He's kind of been plotting behind the scenes somewhat, trying to get David in position through, going out and getting this dowry or whatever, putting him out in the army, putting these requests upon him, go fight the enemy and all. But it says the idea in his heart was to get David killed. But it was a little bit behind the scenes. Now he takes the next step more openly, where he goes to Jonathan, his servants, and openly tells them, "Go kill David." Jonathan, in turn, because he loves David, because there's this friendship between them, he goes to David and warns him, says, "Hey, my dad's out to get you. My dad wants to kill you. Look, you hide until tomorrow, and I'm going to speak to my dad about you. And I'll let you know, David, I'll let you know of the outcome from the discussion." Thus Jonathan spoke well of David to Saul, his father, and said to him, "Let not the king sin against his servant, against David, because he has not sinned against you, because his works have been very good toward you. For he took his life in his hands and killed the Philistine. And the Lord brought about a great deliverance for all Israel. You saw it and rejoiced. Why then will you sin against innocent blood to kill David without a cause?" So Saul heeded the voice of Jonathan, and Saul swore, "As the Lord lives, he shall not be killed." Then Jonathan called David, and Jonathan told him all these things. So Jonathan brought David to Saul, and he was in his presence as in times past. Well, everything's fixed, I guess, huh? No more problems. No, I'm being facetious, of course. Jonathan here reminds his father of David's deeds, saying, "Why would you do this? He's never been against you. He's always been for you. He's done great things for Israel. You saw it. You were rejoicing in it. Why would you take his innocent blood?" It says Saul heeds his son's words, and he swears that David will not be killed. In essence, he's trying to say, "Okay, I won't get him. I won't try to get him." But what we're seeing here is a man who's not acting rationally. I've heard it said it could be compared to schizophrenia or something, the Saul that we see in his coming chapter. One day he wants to kill David, the next day says he won't. They don't turn around and want to kill him and chase him. They don't get convicted and say, "Oh, David, you're so much better than I am. I'm sorry, I repented, I shouldn't have been doing it." Then he'll turn around and try to get him again. He's a man who really is going downhill. Saul's a man who's really struggling, saying one thing one day, going against it the very next day. At this point, Jonathan convinces his dad that David's a good guy, so Saul says, okay, won't kill him. So Jonathan calls David, and he comes in to his presence, into Saul's presence, as in times past. And it would be nice to say that there's no more spears going to be thrown at David, that Saul has repented and turned, but we'll see in a moment that's not the case. Verse 8,
And there was war again, and David went out and fought with the Philistines and struck them with a mighty blow, and they fled from him. So the Philistines attack again. David goes out with the army, gets another victory. And the Philistines flee. Now the distressing spirit from the Lord came upon Saul as he sat in his house with his spear in his hand. And David was playing music with his hand. Then Saul sought to pin David to the wall with the spear. But he slipped away from Saul's presence, and he drove the spear into the wall. So David fled and escaped that night. So much for Saul's intentions to never hurt David. So David now flees from Saul. Verse 11, Saul also sent messengers to David's house to watch him and to kill him in the morning. And Michal, David's wife, told him, saying, "If you do not save your life tonight, tomorrow you will be killed." So Michal let David down through a window, and he went and fled and escaped. And Michal took an image and laid it in the bed, put a cover of goat's hair for his head, and covered it with clothes. So you see the picture here. David goes home. Saul sends messengers to wait outside. When he comes out in the morning, you kill him. Michal, Saul's daughter, but now David's wife, knows of this and says, "If you don't save your life tonight, tomorrow they will kill you." And it tells us that she lets David down through a window and he escapes. Well, she, in an attempt to kind of cover for him, takes an image, you know, a statue or something. You've done that where you have to maybe take like pillows and put it in the bed and make it look like someone's lying in there. Well, she puts something in the bed there, puts some goat's hair sticking out of the covers and all the blanket, and makes it look like David is in the bed. Verse 14. So when Saul sent messengers to take David, she said, "He is sick." Then Saul sent the messengers back to see David, saying, "Bring him up to me in the bed, that I may kill him." And when the messengers had come in, there was the image in the bed with the cover of goat's hair for his head. Then Saul said to Michal, "Why have you deceived me like this and sent my enemy away so that he has escaped?" And Michal answered Saul, "He said to me, 'Let me go. Why should I kill you?'" Interesting, all the different interactions going on here. I mean, her dad openly wanting to kill her husband. She's probably pretty afraid of her dad, too. She makes up the story. "Well, he said if I didn't do it, he'd kill me." All this different stuff going on. Saul is just, the seeds of his, of what he's like, is just sown all around here. We see all this unhealthy stuff going on all around here. Psalm 59. I'm not going to read it right now because of time, but if you choose to, for just a moment, turn to Psalm 59. I want to point out one thing to you. There is that night that David is in the house. Saul has sent messengers to get him, to kill him in the morning. Michal says, "You better get out of here or you'll die." If you would like to read, I won't do it tonight, but if you would like to find out what was going on, look at Psalm 59. At the beginning it says, "To the chief musician, set to Do Not Destroy." We do not have the words, we have the words but not the music. We don't have the sheet music anymore to the psalms. They were songs, we just have the words. But it says it's a michtam of David. But when was this written? When Saul sent men and they watched the house in order to kill him. Psalm 59 was written by God through David, as David wrestled through all this and all, at the very time in which he's in the house, the messenger outside waiting to kill him, and this psalm is penned. You might want to take some time and read this psalm sometime this week as we go through our studies and get an idea of what was going on there. So that's what occurs. But he's lowered out of the house then, and he escapes. The father's mad, and she says, "Well, I had to let him go." Verse 18. So David fled and escaped and went to Samuel at Ramah. So David takes off now and he goes to Ramah. That's where Samuel the prophet is living. And David tells Samuel, says, and he told him all that Saul had done to him. And he and Samuel went and stayed in Naoth. Naoth is a community, it's the school of the prophets. So Ramah's the town there, and Naoth is the school for where the prophets go through their training and all. So David goes to Samuel, Samuel and David go to Naoth. Now it was told Saul, saying, take note, David is at Naoth in Ramah. Then Saul sent messengers to take David. And when they saw the group of prophets prophesying, and Samuel standing as leader over them, the Spirit of God came upon the messengers of Saul, and they also prophesied. So get the picture there. Saul sends these messengers to get David. They show up. They see the prophets. They see Samuel prophesying. They've come to get David. What happens to them? Spirit falls on them, and they start prophesying. And they're praising the Lord. You know, their mission has now been preempted. They're prophesying and praising God and all. So in verse 21, When Saul was told, he sent other messengers, and they prophesied likewise. Then Saul sent messengers again the third time, and they prophesied also. Poor Saul. You know, he keeps sending these guys out. Now go get him. Word comes back, well, your group's out there praising, prophesying. I mean, they didn't get him? No. Okay, well, you guys go. Gets word back, well, your second group's out there prophesying. Oh, man. Send a third group. Word gets back, well, how are they doing? They're out there prophesying too. God just changes all the hearts of these guys. They go out to get David, but God is protecting David. Verse 22. Then he also went to Ramah. So Saul says, you know, want a job done right, do it myself. He takes off. He goes to Ramah and came to the great well that is at Shechu. So he asked and said, where are Samuel and David? And someone said, indeed, they are at Naoth in Ramah. So he went there to Naoth in Ramah. Then the Spirit of God was upon him also, and he went on and prophesied until he came to Naoth in Ramah. And he also stripped off his clothes, and he's taking off his robe and all here, and he prophesied before Samuel in like manner. And he lay down naked all that day and all that night. Therefore they say, is Saul also among the prophets? As we come to the end of this chapter, it just drives home for us what I just mentioned a moment ago, and that is, in these three attempts, and then, of course, Saul being the fourth, these attempts to destroy David, the one who's been anointed by God, we see that God is protecting David. Every time they come to get David, the Spirit of God falls upon these messengers, and they can't take him. They just can't take him. God's hand is upon him. We see David delivered in many ways, whether it's lowered out a window, whether it's God just pouring out a spirit on a bunch of men, whether it's through a sling and a stone, whatever it is, we see God working awesome works of deliverance. Remember that. Remember that when you go forward. God can work in all kinds of ways, sometimes very obvious ways, sometimes very dramatic ways, sometimes everyday kind of ways. But he's at work. For everybody that's in Jesus, he's at work. He's protecting. He's guiding. He's delivering us. So whether you come up against Goliath, whether you face Saul along the way, whatever, just keep that heart after God's heart. God is faithful to those who will just trust and look to him. God is always faithful. Always faithful. Well, let's stand.